Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and a very warm welcome to the Tata Steel Limited Q2 FY18 post-results conference call, hosted by HSBC Securities and Capital Markets Private Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Rajesh Lachhani. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah, hi all. On behalf of HSBC, we welcome all for joining us for Tata Steel's 2Q FY18 earnings conference call. We are pleased to host Tata Steel's senior management team. So without further ado, I hand over the call to Ms. Samita Shah, Group Head of Corporate Finance and Risk Management at Tata Steel. Over to you, ma'am.
Thanks, Rajesh. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the call to discuss our results for the second quarter of 2018. I have the senior management team with us: Mr. T.V. Narendran, Managing Director; Mr. Strategy, Group Executive Director; and Mr. Hans Fischer, CEO, Tata Steel Europe; and, of course, several other colleagues. Our results were published a few minutes back, and the presentation has been uploaded as well. I would like to draw your attention to the second slide, which has the safe harbor clause, and just mention that it would cover the entire discussion today. Without time, I would request Kaushik to walk through the first part of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Samita, and good evening to all of you, and welcome to the analyst call for the second quarter results of FY 2018. Let me first talk to you about the economy and the industry situation. Globally, the economic growth momentum has improved with continuing uptick in global trade and industrial production in most of the regions. Steel production globally grew at about 5.5% year-on-year in 9 months of calendar 2017, compared to the demand forecast of 7% year-on-year for the similar period. This, coupled with capacity closures in China, bodes well for the demand-supply balance. The headline consumption has improved in China with this. This, coupled with the trade remedial measures across the regions, has resulted in lower exports from China. All of the above led to improvement in international steel prices in the last couple of months. The raw materials also went higher with higher than expected steel production and demand, along with support from Chinese coal production. We note that the steel prices have softened a bit with lower activity levels with around the CPC election in China, leading to correction in coal of about 10% and iron ore about 8% of late. Now Chinese mills have announced production cuts for the winter, and we will be closely watching this space. Moving on to Tata Steel's consolidated performance during the quarter, group deliveries were up 15% year-on-year and 11% Q-on-Q, primarily reflecting an increase in our India volumes. India realizations are down with changes in the business model with our tin plate subsidiary on a different buy and sell model, lower ferrochrome prices and softness in demand. European realizations too dropped due to adverse product mix. Our Singapore and Thailand operations witnessed an improvement. During the quarter, the consolidated EBITDA, with a 53% year-on-year increase, stood at about ₹4,726 crores. The EBITDA margin was of around 14.6%. It is down on a Q-on-Q basis, mainly due to lower performance at Tata Steel Europe. While group profit after tax from continuing operations stood at about 1,018 crores, the OCI loss is primarily comprising of loss related to the actual valuation of employee benefits in Europe, an adverse impact of foreign currency translation differences of about 715 crores. Gross debt has increased by about 2,450 crores, mainly due to increase in the seasonal working capital and foreign exchange impact. The liquidity position of the group remains very robust, with about 19,800 crores in cash and cash equivalents. As against the full-year CapEx guidance of around 7,000 crores, we have incurred about 3,318 crores till date. A few comments on Tata Steel Europe's financial performance. In Europe, while volumes were higher than the June quarter, the Tata Steel Europe EBITDA in absolute terms was down quarter on quarter. As you know, this is also the slower season with the August slowdown and the holiday season in August. As guided in Q1, realization was soft, which coupled with increased input cost at downstream units and energy cost impacted the EBITDA. The EBITDA was down on a year-on-year basis due to lower spreads with higher raw material prices. Hans, in his presentation, will speak more about the operating performance of Europe in some time. Moving on to some of the corporate developments, during the quarter, we have signed the MOU with ThyssenKrupp, which marks a major milestone for Tata Steel Group with regard to the wider European portfolio strategy. The combined business will be enabling us to create a sustainable business structure in Europe, along with significant deleveraging at the consolidated balance sheet level. We've also completed the regulated apportionment arrangement in respect of the British Steel Pension Scheme and have paid around £550 million to this effect in September 2017. You would remember I had mentioned this in our earlier call. It has been accounted through the other comprehensive income and reduced the consolidated net worth. The BSPS is now separated from Tata Steel UK and the affiliated companies. The next step would involve the necessary formalities to set up a new scheme with significantly lower risk profile. Going forward, our future strategy will remain on focus, remain on India growth, and have a long-term investment in building a strong European portfolio. With this, I hand over to Naren to walk you through the performance of India and Southeast Asia.
Thanks, Kaushik. Good evening. I'd like to share some highlights of our India and Southeast Asian operations for this quarter. As you all know, the Indian GDP this quarter slowed down to about 5.7%, and this is also a typically seasonally slow quarter for steel, and steel demand this quarter grew barely by 4%. Despite all this, I'm happy to say that we've delivered strong volume growth in India. Deliveries grew by 12% quarter-on-quarter and 18% year-on-year. For Tata Steel, our constraint has always been the capacity and not the market, and with Kalinganagar ramping up, we've had more volumes to sell and a wider product range. We have used that to get a greater share of our existing customers' wallet as well as to enter new segments and expand our customer universe. Tata Steel Kalinganagar is operating smoothly and is now close to full ramp-up. I would also like to highlight that our growth has been broad-based and across all verticals. We have delivered market-beating volume growth of 34% year-on-year and 25% quarter-on-quarter in the automotive segment with our focus on new product development and new vehicle models. Our branded products, retail and solutions segment grew by 14% year-on-year and 9% quarter-on-quarter, with sales to emerging customer accounts growing by 14% year-on-year and 16% quarter-on-quarter. Our downstream units such as tubes and wires continue to grow, and transfers to these segments grew by 29% year-on-year and 16% quarter-on-quarter. Our largest segment, which is industrial products, projects and exports, grew by 11% year-on-year and 8% quarter-on-quarter, with our targeted value-added and new segment sales, which includes the pre-engineered building, the equipment, and the pipes business, growing 60% year-on-year and 18% quarter-on-quarter. During the quarter, we developed 27 new products across various customer segments. On the realizations front, we saw some softness in longs. Our headline realization numbers appear to be more soft. That is primarily because of two reasons. One is lower ferrochrome prices, and to the negative impact of change in the business model for our subsidiary tin plate, because earlier we used to get the billing of the tin plate on Tata Steel, whereas now it is on a transfer price basis at Hot Roll Coils. During the quarter, our overall EBITDA grew by 17% quarter on quarter and 71% year on year to 3,408 crores. This significant improvement in our EBITDA reflects the strength of our operations and marketing network. On a per ton basis, our EBITDA per ton stood at 11,079 rupees per ton, witnessing a growth of 4% quarter on quarter and 45% year on year. Tata Steel Kalinganagar continues to ramp up and operate smoothly and is now running at close to 100%. Our Southeast Asian business operations delivered strong operating performance during the quarter with higher deliveries and improved spreads, despite the fact that the construction sector was weak both in Singapore and in Thailand. We remain positive on the Indian steel market as encouraging government reforms are expected to improve investment environment, leading to a higher growth trajectory in the coming years. However, private sector investment is still weak. The government thrust on to increase the tax transparency is also expected to facilitate the growth of organized players. With this, I'll hand over to Hans to talk about our European operations.
Thank you, Naren. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. These are the highlights of the European operations for our first quarter. All our figures are on a continuous operations basis, which means we have excluded the specialty steels growth businesses which were sold earlier this year, while prior periods have been restated to reflect this. Deliveries in the second quarter were 50% higher than the previous year and 8% higher than the sequential quarter and supply chain improvements. Second quarter revenues were 32% up year on year with higher deliveries and reflecting the improved market conditions and an uplift in the sales of differentiated products. Deliveries were 5% higher on a sequential basis. EBITDA was £89 million in the summer quarter, which was £38 million lower than the previous year and £63 million lower on a sequential basis as a result of higher raw material prices feeding into the result. We continue to strengthen our sales mix with deliveries of higher value differentiated products, increasing by almost 200 basis points in the last year to about 38% of total sales. This has been made possible by new products we have brought to the market. In quarter two, we launched 5 new products to customers, including ColorCoat Prisma, a coated steel with a revolutionary triple layer paint system, offering customers superior aesthetics and color performance. We also launched a new tube product ideal for manufacturers of trailer axles for heavy goods vehicles. Meanwhile, our continued focus and close working relationships with customers led to us securing a number of orders in the automotive sector, including supplying steel for the outer panels of a sports utility vehicle made by a prestige German manufacturer, and steel for suspensions and seat components. Looking ahead, European steel demand is expected to grow by almost 2% this year and 1% next year, in line with modest economic growth. European steel mills are expected to be under continued pressure from imports, so we must keep focusing on areas we can control, like improving our competitive performance and continuing to develop products and services for our customers.
With this, we will open the floor for questions.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We will take the first question from the line of Rakesh Jhunjhunwala from Rare Enterprises. Please go ahead.
So my first question is on a consolidated basis. The tax provision is 52% of the profit before tax. And even in the your provision in the standalone is about 687, while it's about 1125 crores. So you don't understand what is this 52% rate of tax?
Thank you. I think the to explain the consolidated one, the if you look at it, the essentially the tax is on account of deferred tax due to the pension provisioning, because this pension, which is the 550 million that went into your into as an employer contribution as part of the settlement for the RAA, actually created a deferred tax. So we have accounted it as not as a settlement, because if it was a settlement, then it would have gone in directly to the P&L. However, given the fact that there is a new scheme that is being floated, depending on the member consent to the current pensioners. That will, the final picture will emerge in about 3 to 4 months' time, and therefore this has been treated under the OCI. So what you see is the taxation tax number is essentially the deferred tax element, not the cash tax.
Actually, it's an extraordinary provision, which could be reversed.
So the OCI, it has now gone into the other comprehensive income. What happens is the new scheme will be one which will have significantly de-risk liability profile.
That we understand, Mr. Chatterjee, but it's not a normal provision which you're going to make every quarter.
No.
That's why it's extraordinary. Same thing, last time you had a 700 crore income, you know, because of fluctuation in the value of currency.
Yeah, that is the translation changes in the overseas holding.
How was it this quarter?
This quarter is about 150 odd.
So that's 550 crore lower because of that.
Yeah.
The EBITDA.
Correct.
And how do you look upon the prospects for the next 2 quarters?
So I'll ask Naresh to talk about it.
Well, I think the steel prices did go up last quarter, so it was more in August and September.
Right.
So the full impact was not really felt.
Oh.
Going forward, it looks a bit stable. Your international prices went up, then came down a little bit. Now it seems to have stabilized. China is doing better than we had originally thought.
Right.
See, the second half of the year is a better part of the year from a domestic demand point of view.
Right.
Let's wait and see what happens. So let's see. I think we are more positive about the second half of the year.
Including Europe.
Including Europe.
Yeah.
Including Europe. What about ferrochrome prices?
Ferrochrome prices started going up again. Has not gone up to the levels that we've seen in the past, but is somewhere between the levels at which it was in Q1 and at its highest.
So it is recovering. Therefore, the third and fourth quarters are good for ferrochrome also, generally.
Be better than the first 2 quarters.
Right, and even Europe should do better in the next 2 quarters?
In the fourth quarter for sure. The second, yeah. Next quarter is actually a slower quarter because of December.
Mm.
But a fourth quarter view of ours as we stand today is certainly a much better view.
And how's the coking coal cost now?
Well, it's stabilized. It had most of the high cost stocks are flowing through the system.
Right.
It has stabilized now. Basically, it dropped a bit.
Right.
It seems to be a bit stable, but of course, November, December, January is always cyclone season in Australia, so we have to wait and see.
Let's hope there are no cyclones.
Yeah. So that's the only uncertainty.
Yeah. But otherwise, they are better than what, they're cheaper than what they used to be.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
And that applies to Europe also?
Yeah, it is the same purchase of coking coal.
And are you also looking to acquire a lot of assets in all these auctions?
We have shown our interest. We'll see those assets and then take a view.
But sir, how would you do that thing here, right? Will it be part of Tata Steel, or you will buy the assets into Tata Steel, or you put equity from Tata Steel or something like that?
So I think we are working on what are the assets, first of all, in terms of which one makes more sense. Because we don't want to get into it for the sake of getting to it. There has to be a good strategic fit. We have to have the confidence of ability to create value in them.
Right.
And therefore, I think over the next month and a half, we will get a better sense of the details of the asset, the profile, and the risk involved, and so on. So, but I think India growth is important, and therefore that's where it comes from.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Nitesh Jain from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Narendran, two questions.
Yeah.
Sir, in the presentation, the graph shows that the imports have gone up sharply Q on Q, like 2.6 million tons. So can you elaborate like which kind of products the imports have gone up, and what is the reason on one side the domestic prices are lower, then why the imports are going up?
Flat products, largely flat products, and most of the jump actually happened in September. If I remember right, September was almost 800,000 tons of imports. I think basically people capitalized on a little bit of drop in some prices. I think it's just the price arbitrage that people are working on, because India's exports also continues to be strong, because you look at Southeast Asian markets, China is not as active as they were before, and that opens up space for Indian exporters. So there's a balance. I expect this year maybe India will be a net exporter of steel by a small volume. So there's a bit of balance between exports and imports just now.
Sure. And sir, secondly, you know, the headline India realization number is looking lower, like Q on Q, maybe because of the tinplate accounting and, you know, ferrochrome lower prices.
Correct.
So if you can just basically share broadly how has been the average price movement for long and flat products Q on Q basis?
Yeah. So the third element is what you said. Long products have been relatively soft. So, you know, so the tinplate accounting issues and the ferrochrome prices have certainly played its role. Long products have also been a bit soft. The flat is what has been strong. So if you look at flat products alone, I think the price increases were around 2,000 odd rupees, 2,000
okay.
But, you know, and most of it came through in August and September. And you should also keep in mind that we are not as much a spot player as we have a fair amount of contracts which are quarterly or you know, automotive and all that. So it's not necessary that everything flows through immediately.
Yeah.
So that's why there's more stability when things go down, as well as a little bit of, you know, the balancing out when things go up. But overall, the trend is positive. I think globally there's better balance. Most economies are growing now. Most steel-consuming regions are growing now, and China is exporting less.
All right, sir. These were the two questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Amit Dixit from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question, sir. I have a couple of questions. One is, what was the average HRC realization that you got in Europe? Because the graph shows that, of course, I mean, it is of spot prices, that prices went up. So I presume that in Q3 you should have much better prices.
The average hot rod coil price was about 470 euro per ton.
Beg your pardon, I didn't get it.
470 euros per ton.
Okay. But that is spot prices or the realization that you achieved?
That's the realization of ours.
Yeah, most of
okay.
Yeah.
And what do you, I mean, do you see it going up in third quarter or, I mean, how is it going to be? Because spot prices have gone up significantly.
That will go up a little bit more, we expect, but also raw material prices will well, follow that. Or the other way around, the overall coal price will follow the raw material price.
Okay, fair enough. The second question is on the coking coal cost. If you can quantify the coking coal cost that went into P&L in both India and Europe.
So, as far as India is concerned, the consumption cost in quarter one was about $175, and in quarter two about $155.
Okay, sir. And in Europe, how much was that?
So, by the way, this is imported coal, FOB cost. Huh?
Yeah, FOB coal, imported coal. That's correct.
So, in Europe, it was about $163 per ton
for Q2.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Pinakin Parekh from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much. Three quick questions. My first question is on the India HRC or the flat product environment, where would the company's realizations on the domestic steel prices be vis-a-vis the implied landed steel prices? Are they at a discount? And if so, what broadly would the discount be, 2, 5, 10%?
No, see, if you look at even within the quarter, the steel prices varied from $500 to $600, so hot rolled coil price. So to me, July was low, August it really shot up, September it kind of dropped a bit, right? So to me, I would say in August and September, see, always the domestic, I mean, the international prices are lower than the domestic prices, you know. So to that extent, that's why we export, but we export less than what we sell in the domestic. And normally you export to kind of ease the pressure a bit on the domestic. So if you look at the, you know, page 17, that gives you some, on the presentation, that gives you some sense of the China export price FOB versus the Mumbai, you know, ex-duty VAT GST price. I don't know if that answers your question.
So just to, you know, just to take this point further, in the next 12 to 18 months, do you see in the industry situation in India evolving where the domestic steel prices, I mean the base level flat product prices, can move to a 5 to 10% premium over the landed Chinese HRC export prices? I mean, whatever the prices plus the import duty plus the freight, do you think the markets can strengthen locally to that extent?
So it's like this, you know, typically the comparisons are always a bit difficult because, you know, what comes into India in a certain month is what was bought 3 months back, you know. So that in a volatile market, that kind of distorts the picture, and traders or importers take positions based on the way they see prices going, you know. So if you saw most of the imports which came into India over the last few months were imports which were booked earlier at much lower prices. You know, so that kind of distorts the picture when you compare month to month. But overall, I think India, like I said earlier, India probably will end up exporting about 8 million tons of steel this year and importing about 8 million tons. So there's a balance there. And if the domestic demand picks up, then I see the exports being less. You know, people will export less and sell in the domestic market more. So, so I don't see till such time the exports come down significantly, I don't see the domestic prices at a significant premium to the international prices.
Understood. Second question is that in the as you are seeing that the steel price environment looks good, the second half will see a pickup in volumes. Are there any cost pressures in the India operations that we should be aware of that can come through over the next two quarters? I mean, coking coal is obviously a spot priced element other than coking coal.
Well, the most material is coking coal, but that is more or less kind of covered in some sense because what we've already booked is what is going to arrive, you know, well into the next quarter and get used over the next quarter. But there have been significant price increases in electrodes, in, you know, basically graphite electrodes, which we use in the ladle furnaces or in refractories, etc. But none of them are as material as zinc prices have also gone up. They're not as material as coking coal prices. So they will have some impact on our costs, but not to the extent that we can't offset through other improvement measures.
Sure. And my last question is on the Tata Europe Thyssen, you know, announcement MOU. It's been a month since it has happened. In terms of timelines, what are the events that we should wait for in terms of, is it approval process, regulatory approval, or steps to be taken by the companies to know what could be the final date for the eventual merger to go through?
So, Pinakin, you know, we have signed the MOU. Now we are in a stage of preparatory for the diligence and negotiation on the definitive agreement. So, therefore, the next milestone is actually the definitive agreement, which will take a few months' time, post-diligence and negotiation. Then the next timeline after definitive agreements is antitrust.
Okay.
So, after these two, it's the finality of that process is achieved.
Understood.
And in between, obviously, there are some stakeholder conversations, and which is also important to ensure that we get into the definitive agreements.
Understood. Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah,
thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Kamlesh Jain from Prabhudas Lilladher. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, sir. So just one question on the part of this other operating income, like this EPP, these benefits, EPCG benefits. So in the Q4 quarter, we had mentioned that we would be booking that in the Q4. So like say in this quarter, we have booked in the mid of a year. So is it going to be trend going forward, or it is based on the cash basis? Whenever we get the approval from the government, then we book it. how the recognition is made for that?
No, so the recognition is EPCG, as you know, is linked very directly to level of exports. So
okay.
Given the fact that our exports have increased over the first 6 months, that's why it is more important to match it on that basis, and we've taken that.
So basically, there is a threshold which you have to cross.
Yeah.
Once you cross the threshold, then you can recognize the benefit.
It, yeah.
Okay. And lastly, sir, on the other expenses, how to understand that? Like, say, we have seen the reversal of excise duty. So, so going forward, how should we take the run rate of the other expenses?
I think the decrease in the other expenses is effectively, if you look at it, some of it is operational. For example, the repairs, maintenance prices, cost has been lower this quarter. Then there are this whole issue relating to rates and taxes. Because just now, as you know, that this is the first quarter where all the other indirect taxes like entry tax, clean energy cess, service tax, CST is not applicable for 1st July.
Hmm.
And therefore, they have all subsumed into the GST. So that's the one impact that has happened. And also the fact is that there was some, there was this excise duty on the closing stocks on the first quarter, which obviously when it gets sold in the second quarter, those also had some reversal impact.
Okay. And so lastly, if we adjust for all that transfer pricing related to template, so on an like-to-like basis, how much increase we have seen in the realization and how much can we see in the Q3?
So if you look at the, the last quarter, the thin plate impact was about 1,000 rupees negative.
Per ton.
Okay. And for ferroalloys, it was about 150 rupees per ton negative impact.
Okay.
And the steel NR was largely flat, maybe about 200 rupees down, largely driven by longs and the fact that July was probably the worst month in the calendar year so far, or the financial year so far. As far as next quarter is concerned, again, there are some pluses and minuses because of the tin plate impact, and while ferroalloy prices are better, long products are not expected to be any better. So overall, we look at about 1,000 rupees better in Q3 compared to Q2 on an overall basis.
Okay. And sir, any reversal of DMF in this quarter, as we had seen in some mining companies?
DMF?
Yeah, like say that Supreme Court order which came out 13th of October.
Okay. No, it's still to come.
Okay. Thanks a lot, sir.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Ritesh Shah from Investec. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, my first question is on the CapEx guidance. You indicated numbers for FY18. Sir, any update for the next fiscal, what we are looking at? And secondly, we had the BRPL transaction, which actually didn't go through. Would you like to provide some color on what was the rationale, why did it so happen?
So I think the on the CapEx guidance, I think it's too early to give a guidance for 19 because it's typically we give it in the fourth quarter, and I think that's because our planning process gets crystallized around that time. So I think you need to wait till the next call when we can provide a better guidance because there are many projects and plans that will be considered and that will get incorporated in that. On BRPL, I think I'll only say that we've given the disclosures to the exchange that there were certain regulatory issues and including FEMA and related matters, and that's the basis on which we there was an extension that was provided by the seller, but beyond a point in time they did not want it because they wanted to sell with those risks which we were not comfortable with.
Okay, that helps. So my second question is, how should one look at the balance sheet given there is news flow around SR Steel, Electro Steel? So what are the balance sheet ratios that one should look at or that you will adhere to if you had to go for anything inorganic?
So I think it is important for us to stress that, you know, so once the joint venture in with Thyssen in Europe is undertaken or it is kind of made implemented, there will be certain impact on the debt position because it will be a deconsolidated entity. So there will be a reduction of consolidated debt as far as the headline is concerned. So our approach on this is that we will obviously keep focusing on the balance sheet because it is important to ensure that the balance sheet has the appetite for not only growth but also for any environment changes on this deal cycle. So this is, you know, just now it is too early to talk about it because it's only an expression of interest. We need to look at these entities. They are all performing entities. We need to understand how much value we can create out of them, what value they will create for us, what is the earnings capacity that each of them will have beyond what they are performing currently, what is it that Tata Steel can bring to the table for these entities, and based on that, we will have to look at the valuation and also the structuring for the valuation. So I think it's very early days at this point of time to make any definitive view, but obviously our balance sheet focus will be critical and we will continue to focus on both growth and the capital structure and we try to balance between both of them.
Sir, just trying my luck, would you like to give some numbers on the gearing given Sir Thyssen JV, basically it might take some time to get the things sorted. So assuming that thing is not there on the platter and based on the current balance sheet, would we like to stress our gearing to like 2.5x or above that?
2.5x of debt equity, you're saying?
Yes, sir, net gearing.
Yeah, unlikely on a more structural basis because our old target is more around 1.5 on a long-term basis. But there are stuff that we may have to do from a timing perspective. I don't think doing Thyssen JV is any more a doubt, but it's a process and we will go through that and make it happen. So there may be timing differences between capital exposures that we take and the actual targets that actually get reflected on. So, but our, as I said, that, you know, we will continue to focus on both debt to EBITDA as well as debt to equity because these are important parameters for us. If I look at Tata Steel India only, you know, you talked about 2.5, but we are only 0.6. That's not the point because the entire debt profile that is existing, how much of it will go out, we've given a guidance of 2.5, will be deconsolidated out of it. So the resultant balance sheet will have to have the appetite for further growth.
Okay, that helps. Sir, my last question is...
Sorry to interrupt, Ritesh, but may we request you to come back in queue for any follow-up questions. Thank you. Participants are requested to limit their questions to 2 per participant. Time permitting, you may come back in the queue for a follow-up question. We'll take the next question from the line of Rajesh Lachhani from HSBC Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, my question is regarding, again, SR Steel. So we have a five-year target to double our capacity. So SR Steel is a 10 million ton plant. So if we supposedly acquire that, then our capacity would already be 24 million ton, assuming 1 million ton expansion at Jamshedpur. So what happens to the Kalinganagar expansion in that case?
Good question, but I think the point here is... you know, as I said, that we need to, end of the day, calibrate the targets, the value that we create. It's not a question of only the volume coverage. It has to be a profitable approach. The Kalinganagar expansion is obviously a very attractive expansion for us, and work has been going on. And I think it's not one or the other. We have to look at... how we can balance our growth between organic and inorganic.
Can this target of doubling capacity increase in case we acquire SR?
So I think you're pushing me into one particular target which I don't think we can talk about it, because I think it will important from us, important from our perspective, that we need to look at it in a more balanced way and not look at just volume or one particular target. It's early days. I can't comment on any specific targets at this point of time.
Thanks for answering my question, sir.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Abhishek Padar from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question, sir. Sir, could you give us the detail of export sales and domestic sales from India in this quarter and how it compares from the last quarter?
Yeah. Roughly, we are exporting between 100 and 150,000 tons a month. And if I look at exports of this quarter, you know, it was about 308,000 tons compared to 277 in first quarter.
Sir, so, given the higher global prices and domestic prices being at a discount, is there a attempt to push more volumes in the export market?
No, firstly, domestic prices are better than export prices. We are not at a discount to exports. So So it's always if you can sell in the domestic, it's better to sell in the domestic. But obviously, when international prices are strong, firstly, there is less imports which comes into India, or if it comes at decent prices. And secondly, it allows us an opportunity to export grades, which eases the pressure on the domestic market.
Yeah. So for the full year, you would be exporting about close to 1.2 to 1.3 million tons, as you have mentioned.
Yeah.
The second question is about the net debt movement. If you look at from the 1Q to 2Q, there is a significant jump of close to $1 billion in the net debt. Part of it could be explained through the 550 million pound that you have paid for the BSPS. There's still about 2,000 crores which needs to be explained. Could you give more color on that?
Yeah, that 2,600 is a translation impact on account of the overseas debt. So the net debt increase is actually more around the 2,500. For the first half.
Right. So do you see that this is going to be a peak debt, or do you expect this debt to, you know, increase further in next couple of quarters before the ThyssenKrupp JV settles in?
So I think it will be, from our perspective, from an ongoing continuing operations perspective, this would be it, because if I don't factor in any big capex or investments, which is not there at this point of time, for the few quarters that you talked about, this would be roughly the numbers. As you can look at it, it is a gross debt number, not the net debt number. We are also sitting with about 11,000 crores of liquidity.
Yeah. Thanks. So the last question is around the European market. During the presentation for the ThyssenKrupp deal, you had mentioned synergies close to 400 million to 600 million euros. We didn't speak about how does this JV impact the European steel prices. And as for the industry contracts, I've been in touch. It seems that there will be a good increase in European steel prices. So could you give us some color that how do we see the European steel markets, you know, as the JV starts coming in?
I can land up in jail talking about prices in Europe as part of the joint venture, because under antitrust laws, we cannot comment on that. The focus on the synergies has purely been on cost synergies, and that is where we can talk about it. We don't determine the market. The market has to find its own place.
Okay. Thanks a lot, sir.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Dhaval Joshi from PhillipCapital. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Sir, a couple of clarifications. First, on the European piece of the business, the press release mentioned or the presentation mentions there's some one-off volumes which has happened, because of which we've seen a sharp uptick in the volume during the quarter. Is that one of the reasons why, because of which the EBITDA has been a bit of a drag, or it's got nothing to do with it? And can you quantify that volume?
So we had about 190,000 tons of slab. That's the one off that we've been talking about.
I'm sorry, I missed you.
We had about 190,000 tons of slab steel, which is the one off that has been mentioned.
Okay. So, was just looking at the EBITDA number, and in fact, even the gross spreads, Last quarter, I still recollect, sir, you said the spreads are marginally lower as far as Europe is concerned. Whereas if you were to look at this quarter's RM cost per ton as well as realizations, there's been a sharp uptick in the RM cost and the realizations have gone down. So how do we really read this? Can we say the peak cost as far as RM is already in for the Q3 business and for the European business, and from Q3 onwards, do we see that declining?
So I think there has been a reduction in the spreads in the market. If I look at it from the spreads here, it from a 285 euros per ton, it has come down to about 235 euros per ton in the September quarter. I think in the December quarter, and the prices have been moved down from 540 euros to about 470 euros per ton. We see, as Hans mentioned in his commentary, that we see in some increase in the prices in the December quarter. But you have to also understand that December quarter is a slowest quarter because of the winter shutdown. And therefore, it is more around this trend that will continue as far as the spreads is concerned. The spread increase for potential is certainly much more in the March quarter or in the year.
So there is no other one-offs per se which has been there in the European business?
No.
Okay. So secondly, on the India business, Mr. Narendran mentioned we're looking at 1,000 rupee higher realizations in Q3 compared to the adjusted numbers for Q2. If I'm not mistaken, sir, the price hikes in August and September are quite sharp and the numbers that we've reported do not reflect any of that. So are we a bit conservative in terms of giving that guidance?
No, there are a couple of things. Like I said, when you look at the price hikes which are reported in the market, they're largely to do with the HR commercial prices.
Right.
So what happens is when we have automotive contract, automotive is 20% of our sales.
Right.
Things are a bit more stable. It doesn't kind of shoot up and down with commercial prices. Right. So that is one impact which normally in a rising market, which kind of averages down the price, and in a falling market, averages up the price. Right? Secondly, the tin plate impact will continue to be there, and I think that's going to have an impact of about 200 rupees at least for the next quarter. Long products prices, we kind of have kept it slightly lower than current levels, so that also has an impact. And there are other contracts that we have, for instance, like railway tenders and things like that, where also the prices are a bit fixed. So, because we have less of a commodity play, when prices go up, it doesn't go up, at the same rate as HR commercial prices. So that's where you will see a little bit of balancing out. But let's wait and see. This is the guidance we're giving now. Let's wait and see how things are.
So, last question on coking coal. How do we see the cost for Q3, both in India as well as in Europe?
So in India, as I mentioned earlier, the consumption cost will be about $10 less Q2.
Okay, and for Europe?
Similar.
It'll be similar. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Vineet Malu from Birla Sun Life Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
My question has been answered. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Abhisar Jain from Centrum Broking. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Sir, my question is related to KPO. I guess I heard right that it is already running at full utilization. Can you please confirm that and also mention the volume, if at all, for this quarter for KPO?
So basically, the blast furnaces are running at 100% capacity utilization. And if I look at the downstream, maybe it's about 95%. Hot strip mill and things like that. Yeah.
Okay.
We don't normally give you separately the volumes for Jamshedpur and Kalinganagar.
Sure, sir. And, sir, on the KPO expansion, since we are already running at full utilization, just wanted to understand that the decision for the next phase and the size of the same, Is there any particular reasons for delay in taking that decision? Because we might be looking at very little volume growth on the India business in FY19, without the inorganic route fructifying by then.
I think the discussions are at a very, very advanced stage and take a call very quickly. But it's not that everything is waiting, because we had already taken the approval of our board earlier to start doing the engineering work. So it's not as if the activity will get delayed, because a lot of the preparatory work is already going on. So so to that extent, the timeline should be the same.
And sir, would you be able to confirm that whenever that decision is taken, the size would be 5 million ton or a 3 million ton?
In all probability, it's going to be a 5 million ton increase in the hot metal capacity. The final, how much of hot rolled coil and how much of steel, that's a fine-tuning call that we are taking. I mean, that call will be taken later. But the hot metal, the blast furnace capacity will increase by 5 million tons.
Sure, sir. Understood, sir. And last bookkeeping question. In the others and elimination EBITDA that we put in our PPT, and this is on slide 12, it seems that the Q1 FY18 number, which was earlier 740 crore something, has been mentioned as minus 100 crore. Is that a typo or is there a restatement there? Yes, slide 12 of Q2 FY18 PPT, the others and elimination EBITDA for the previous quarter, Q1 FY18. So it's minus 101, whereas in Q1 PPT, this number was 743.
No, it is, Q1 number is 743.
No. Yeah, so this minus 101, which is mentioned here, is wrongly mentioned, is it?
What the slide?
Let me, maybe come back to you. There's some confusion, let me come back to you.
Sure. Thank you so much. That's all from my side.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rakesh Jhunjhunwala from Rare Enterprises. Please go ahead.
ThyssenKrupp has announced today that they have a strategic announcement to make on November 1st regarding India. Are we part of that?
No, not for Tata Steel at least.
Right.
Could be something else. I don't know.
Right. No, it doesn't concern Tata Steel.
Not on Tata Steel.
And so, you take this Singapore fluctuation in currency, this relates to the entire debt in Singapore.
Yes.
Which is about how much?
It's about 19,000 crores.
Right. So therefore, any fluctuation, if the currency appreciates, you lose. If it depreciates, you gain. The rupee
correct.
Appreciates, you gain. If it depreciates, you lose.
Correct. From a translation point of view.
From translation point of view, right? But sir, the questions which are floating around about the joint venture with ThyssenKrupp,
yeah.
Second quarter results in Europe don't reflect that kind of EBITDA.
Which one? The joint venture?
Yeah, they're saying the joint venture's EBITDA will be 1.5 billion. I don't know if officially or some people's conjuncture or whatever.
Yeah.
So the joint venture's EBITDA is supposed to be 1.5 billion with the improvement, possibility of 500 million efficiency costs over the next 3 years. So you go to 2 billion. But it is not, that kind of probability is not reflected in your current year's EBITDA.
Yeah, so I think that number came from first of all, it's a euro number.
Right.
If I look at the euro number for Tata Steel Europe last year.
Right.
6 million pounds, so it will be about 600 million euros.
Right.
And if I look at Thyssen's last 12 months EBITDA, it will be roughly about 800 million euros. So it's about that 1.4, 1.5, and then I think whoever's given that commentary would have added the cost synergies of about 500, making it about 2 billion euros.
No, but that's my point. So current quarter's EBITDA is 753.
No, so
half is 2,000 crores, which is about 220 million pounds. 2,000 crores is 84 rupees, no? Pound. It is the euro. Euro is about 1.2. Is about 80 rupees.
Yeah.
So here, at 600 million, it should be 5,000.
Oh,
for the first half, it is 2,000.
Yeah. Yeah, no, so that's why if you look at it the last quarter, see in Europe the maximum EBITDA or the earnings that happens is in the first 6 months of the calendar year, which is Jan to June.
Right.
So if you take the fourth quarter of any year or the last year, and if, which was about 200 million pounds, and if you take the first quarter of this year, it was about 150 million pounds. So if two together would be almost about 370 million pounds.
So Mr. Chatterjee, we can anticipate a good performance from Europe in the first quarter, last quarter, last in the last quarter of this financial year.
That's correct.
That is the best quarter.
That's correct.
And the third, the second is the worst or the third is the worst?
They compete with each other.
Pardon?
I think they compete with each other because...
Exactly.
Because the August is a shutdown for holidays and December is a winter shutdown.
So right. So the fourth quarter is very good. There you 150 million.
Correct.
Okay. That means the first quarter of the financial year and the first quarter of the calendar year are the best.
That's correct. Jan to June to make it simple.
Right. So you've got one good quarter and one bad quarter ahead of you. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the
just
next
to
question.
Just clarify on the previous question, it is an error, so but there is no change in the number.
Thank you.
This is an elimination. Yeah.
We have next question from Bhaskar Basu from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just on Tata Steel Europe. My question is, I just want to understand the reason for the decline because. Realizations, spot prices have been continuously rising, so I understand there is a lag in terms of realization, but ideally realization should have been better, and of course the coking coal is where there could be issues because of the timing lag, but the slide, the waterfall shows coking coal, the cost fall is very limited, so it seems to be a more of a selling price driven decline, so just want to kind of understand how the realizations have lagged and how it plans for going forward.
Well, the decline as was Kausik already said, explained by the reduction of spread. That means...
sir, I'm sorry, but you're not audible. May we request you to come a little closer?
You can hear? You can hear me? It's a reduction of the spread down to 235 euro per ton. Also, raw material prices were a little bit down, but it was especially also the sales price that went down from 540 to 170 euro.
Yeah, basically on the spread itself, I mean, is it a realization-driven contraction in spread or a cost increase-driven contraction in spread? Because the slide shows actually selling result being 33 million pounds lower. Cost is just a 4 million pound.
Selling prices have gone down from 540 to 470. Whereas if I look at the raw material, it has gone down from 255 to 230. So that's the reason why the spread has gone down from 285 to 235.
Okay. Okay, fine. Because the slide shows just the 33 million, the waterfall slide shows the 33 million selling result decline. So that's why I just want to check.
Yeah, so that 540 to 470
okay.
Selling impact, whereas the cost impact on raw materials is about 20 euros.
Okay. Secondly, so going forward, now that we see $10 decline in coking coal costs and realizations have been moving up, so ideally even third quarter should be better than this quarter, isn't it?
So the spread should increase at least marginally from this quarter. That's true.
But we have stopped...
but you also have to factor into account the winter shutdowns in December, second half at least.
Okay. My final question, the decision on KPO, just to clarify, that's irrespective of what you do on the inorganic side, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, thanks. That's all from my side.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Bhavin Sheda from Enam Holdings. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir.
Sir, can you throw some light on the NCLT bids? I'm not on the actual bidding, but what the actual process is, what we understand is the all the companies have submitted the EOIs. So what are the timelines and next step involved to consummate the deal?
At least that we are seeing the diligence process is going to start, has started in few of them, and most of them are bunched together in terms of timeline. So I think over the next 1 month or thereabouts, the diligence process will get completed. That's what our understanding is. And then I think the process is completely in the control of the insolvency professionals, and therefore they are also working hard to find out the best option or the best way to conduct it. And given the various stakeholders, including the creditors, the regulators, and so on involved, so we expect that this process will kind of come to a good shape in the next 2 months or so.
So because I read somewhere there was a NCLT deadline in few companies of around Jan 20. So that deadline is just a submission of bids or completing due diligence, or is to complete the process and hand over the company to new buyer?
Asking questions which you should direct to the insolvency guys, but I think to give you some direction, I think it is determined by that 180 days and 270 days. So it is more around completion of process.
Okay, thank you, sir. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Sanjay Jain from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to know the crude steel production in the second quarter, hot metal and crude steel production.
Actually, the numbers were, we had a press release sometime back on the Q2 numbers. And on overall basis, are you asking for Q3 or what are you asking for?
Q2.
That press release didn't have that hot metal number. I was just searching there.
Hot metal number? Okay. We'll come back.
Yeah.
We'll come back to you.
Okay. And second question to Kaushik. Should we expect significant net debt reduction in the second half from the cash flows? Because first half we had this forex loss in payment to the pension, but these things won't be forex loss may or may be there, but pension payment won't be there. So by the end of year, in the next 6 months, how do you think this working capital thing will play, and as we generate cash flows,
you are right that the one-off payments or one-off cash outgoes on account of pension will not be there. That's behind us. The second thing is on the fourth quarter. I can't see this quarter, but in the fourth quarter, we would expect working capital to come down. It's not the quantity, but it's actually the value. So we have to drive that. I would say that it is kind of at the stable level. Depending on how the working capital can be driven down, it will go down. I'm talking about the gross debt. I'm not talking about the net debt, because that's a net of the liquidity that we have.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more concerned about net, because, you can play around with these two numbers.
Sanjay, we will not play around with cash. So.
I mean, what I'm saying is that, I don't know about, how this debt refinancing and debt repayments are always due. So I'm not saying that playing around with the number in that way. But what I'm saying is in business terms.
We don't have any scheduled debt repayments. All that we have is the working capital related debt. And that is a function of how we can drive the working capital numbers down, given the fact that we will certainly be focusing, as always, on the cash and cash equivalent numbers. So I don't see any unusual spike happening, let me put it that way. And then based on the market conditions and the physical volumes of working capital, we will try to realize as much as we can across all geographies, especially in Europe.
Okay. What capex you are looking at for this full year, FY18?
Guidance has been 7,000. I think we should still stick to that same guidance.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, can we take one last question?
Sure. We have the next question from Saumil Mehta from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead. Saumil, your line is unmuted. Please proceed with your questions. As there's no response, we'll take the last question from the line of Pallav Agarwal from Antique Stock Broking. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening. Just a question on, you know, what would be a mix between flat and long products? Because you mentioned that you're not seeing so much of a price increase in longs. So would it be broadly 50-50 or, you know, different from that?
So we are currently maybe about 80% flats and 20% longs.
Okay. And also just any guidance on the full year volumes for India?
We are sticking by our guidance of 12.3 to 12.4
is what we had said earlier. Okay. Yeah, thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you. Due to time constraints, that was the last question. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Samita Shah for closing comments.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for dialing in. Sanjay, we will get back to you, and if there are any questions, we're happy to take them both. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of HSBC Securities and Capital Markets Private Limited, that concludes this conference call for today. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.